Our culture is horribly confused when it comes to the roles of men and women. Heck, we don't even know what the difference between a man and a woman is anymore. We have people who are saying that there are no differences between the sexes to those who are saying that they are radically different and everything in between. So let's talk about that today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, I just want to encourage you to smash that like button. If you're a guy, smash a like button. If you're a woman, delicately tap it. Isn't that the difference is right there? Also, to subscribe to the channel and let other people know about it. And while you're at it, we are on the internet. Believe it or not, Crisis Magazine is on the internet, the interwebs. We're on social media at Crisis Mag. Follow us wherever you might be. Okay, so let's get started. First, before I really get into the topic, I just want to make a note about terminology. I realize that there's a number of people who think that the term gender is really not even a word, should not be used. We should always use the word sex because that's what the difference between a man and woman is. They're different sexes. They're not different genders. In fact, that's one of the things that the transgender movement is abusing, is that term gender, because they're basically saying somebody's gender can be chosen, biological sex might be different, whatever. I get that and I recognize that. At the same time, people know, most people just consider the word gender to mean a man or a woman. And also, to be quite blunt, if I say the phrase sex roles, people will think I am writing or working for Playboy. So I'm going to say gender roles most of the time and use gender, sex interchangeably. But I do understand that term is problematic, we'll say. Okay, so first, I just want to kind of lay out a few things. In Catholic theology, and in this, it's really based a lot on natural law. And it's not really like it's specific, it's revelation. It's more reason. Men and women are different. Radical statement, please cancel me now. But just that's just the obvious starting point of any discussion when it comes to sex and gender, is that men and women are different. And because they are different, they have different roles. For example, only a woman can give birth to a child. So only a woman can have the role of mother. A man can never have the role of a mother because a man can't give birth to a child. That's the most obvious one. And I know people are denying that in today's world, but I think natural law, we all know that that's true. But it goes beyond that. It goes beyond just a biological sense. Obviously, only men can have the role of Catholic priesthood. Now, that is something from revelation, not from reason alone. But in most cases, a lot of this just is based upon natural law, upon reason, that men and women are different and they have different roles. And them fulfilling their roles is important for a healthy society. Men doing what men are called to do and women doing what women are called to do is important for a healthy culture, a healthy society. Now, needless to say, we do not live in such a society, such a healthy society, a healthy culture. In fact, one of the reasons, one of the primary reasons we don't live in such a healthy society is because of the fact that these roles have been undermined for at least 50, 60 years. And this becomes most obvious, for example, with radical feminism, which has been attacking men, attacking the role of men, trying to make it where men and women are interchangeable for decades now. But it's also much more subtle. We see it at every turn now. I mean, here's an example that I've noticed. If you watch commercials, you will never, ever see a commercial made these days in which the man comes across as smarter than the woman. It always is the case. Either they're equal, like there's no difference between them in the sense that one's smarter than the other one. But if there is one person on the commercial, if there's two people on the commercial and one is smarter than the other, the woman is always the smarter one than the man. The man never corrects the woman and is proven to be right. And these are just that's just a subtle thing that starts to establish this antipathy towards men that basically feminism has been based upon for so long. And so we've seen this evolution of feminism, which started off as, okay, women deserve certain rights that they don't have now. Voting being the most obvious one in the early days, having a voice in government and things of that nature. But today, it's obviously far different than just that. It's the idea that men and women are interchangeable. There is no difference between them. Now, just to go back real quick to Catholic theology and based on natural law, stating that men and women are different is not stating that men and women are unequal. Men and women can be equal in dignity and yet be have separate and different roles. A perfect example is in Catholic world is the Blessed Virgin Mary. The Blessed Virgin Mary, actually, she's unequal to the rest of us because she was immaculately conceived and she's the greatest of all creation. She's man's solitary boast. And so, but the Blessed Mother, Blessed Virgin Mary is a woman, obviously, and she's the greatest and the most holy of all creatures. Yet she was not selected to be a priest, an apostle by our Lord Jesus Christ. And don't tell me it's because Jesus had to worry about the roles of the day and the culture and things like that. He broke all that stuff if he felt like it. I mean, he went around literally saying, "I am God," which kind of broke a few Jewish rules. So I don't think that's really the case. But the fact is because men and women have different roles, the Blessed Virgin Mary was never called to be an apostle, to be a priest. Neither was Christ's most devoted follower, St. Mary Magdalene. I mean, in many ways, she might have been Christ's most devoted follower. Yet, she was not called to be an apostle. She was not called to be a priest. Now, this feminism, the feminism and the blurring of roles between men and women has infected the church greatly. And I don't mean even at the high end of, for example, Pope Francis now selecting lay women to be voters in the upcoming Synod of Bishops, which obviously is not a Synod of Bishops anymore. I mean just in the day-to-day average life of a Catholic parish. You will never, in your average Catholic parish, hear any priest or anybody get up there and say anything about the differences between men and women and talk about these being divine differences. I mean, divinely given differences between men and women. You will never hear that. In fact, you will see a complete blurring between men and women. We see that obviously with altar serving. For since the beginning, only men served at the altar or boys. But then, of course, the abuse crept in the 1960s, late 60s, early 1970s, really, where women started to serve at the altar and girls, and it became accepted until finally Pope John Paul II accepted it officially. But you see this throughout. You couldn't have, for example, most parishes would freak out if every server was a boy and if every reader, every lector, let's say, was a man. And they had no women. And let's say they had every Eucharistic minister. I'm not supporting any of these practices. I'm just stating the reality. Imagine if you had a parish where every Eucharistic minister was a man. You would definitely get complaints. People would freak out. And so, but you see it throughout. You don't hear about the role of women, about the role of men being distinct. And men and women are treated interchangeably. Mothers and fathers are treated interchangeably. I mean, you'll even get on Mother's Day, you'll have the priest who will get up there and say, you know, they don't want to say mother stand up and be recognized because they're afraid they'll offend people. They're afraid they'll offend single women, but also they might offend single dads. And so a lot of times now it's become, they'll even just talk about mothers or those who act as mothers or something like that, because they're afraid of offending anybody. And so you really have a situation where in the church, this idea of men and women being completely interchangeable has infected. And you see that, of course, in the fact that Whenever Ephesians 5 is read at Mass, which I will talk about Ephesians 5 in a minute, often the priest will make a joke like, oh, I'm not going to talk about that one today. And everybody kind of chuckles, their knowing chuckle. But why not, Father? Are you afraid? Are you a coward? Why don't you talk about the clear teaching of sacred scripture in Ephesians? Why are you afraid to do that? Why do you have to make a joke about it? Why do you just simply ignore it? And that's exactly, though, because feminism has infected the Catholic Church. And so really, the reason we have a situation today where men and women are horribly confused about the role of men and women, about the differences and distinctions between men and women, is because of feminism. I mean, that is the problem. It is feminism that is the cause of this. Because feminism has whatever... It's not to say every person who's declared himself a feminist doesn't have good motives at times and doesn't want some legitimate rights given to women and things of that nature. But ultimately, what feminism has led to is our current situation, which is horrible. That's the reason we have it. It's highly destructive for society. I mean, period. Feminism is highly destructive for society, period. End of story. And it's turned, it has frankly demeaned women. That's probably the irony of all this, is these feminists who declared that they are trying to uplift women have in the end demeaned women. We see that with their acceptance of artificial birth control, which Pope Paul VI talked about. Because with the acceptance of artificial birth control and the acceptance, obviously, of abortion, both of those acts, which were pushed hard by the feminists, have demeaned women. Because basically it's given men an excuse to treat women as objects to be used and then thrown aside because there's no consequences to it. Pope Paul VI talked about this in Humanae Vitae. And that's exactly what he predicted is exactly what's happened. And so therefore, feminism has actually demeaned women. A proper understanding of the roles of men and women uplifts both sexes. It uplifts men and uplifts women. And so another point is that feminism has led to transgenderism. I mean, what's interesting is you'll see the feminists like J.K. Rowling who are now against transgenderism. You see where they're against it because they see how terrible it is, and God bless them. I mean, somebody like J.K. Rowling, I'm glad she sees that. But what she doesn't recognize is actually feminism led to transgenderism, because once you undermine the God-given differences between men and women, it's just another step or two until you can switch between being a man or a woman, because really there's no difference. You can ignore the biological differences because you've ignored all the other differences. Because the difference in men and women are not just biological. They go much deeper than that. But once you throw that out the window, then a man can say he's a woman can say he's a man. It's really a straight line between feminism and transgenderism. Now, in response to feminism, there have been efforts to react to it, to go against it. And so you do have like this movement, a masculinity movement, the bro culture. I tried to look up if there's a common name given to it like there is for feminism. And really, I haven't seen that. Different people use different terms. But it's like the Andrew Tates, which I don't really know much about Andrew Tate. I just know when I brought up this topic to my son, he said, oh, you mean like Andrew Tate? So I'm like, okay, I'll sound hip and cool. I'll bring up Andrew Tate like I know what I'm talking about. But you know, the jig is up. I obviously don't know very much about him. But the point is there's a whole movement of men who are trying to reclaim masculinity and basically go against the feminist. And that is in itself, obviously, a noble goal because we should work to undermine feminism, to defeat feminism. However, what I've seen is not a good reaction. It's not a Catholic reaction to feminism. A Catholic reaction we'll talk about in a minute, but this idea where basically men demean women, they objectify them, because what I've seen is a lot of times They're pro pornography. They're pro sleeping around. They assume all women sleep around and will cheat on them. Things of that nature. It's just ridiculous. And this idea that somehow acting like, you know, treating women like trash with contempt, that is not the proper response to feminism. Because what it does is it generates two types of people. One, it generates feminists, because basically what the, I just saw in the chat, somebody said the manosphere, we'll call it that, the manosphere. The manosphere, what it does, it creates feminists, because it basically believes all the myths feminists have said about men, that they're basically all toxic, that they look down on women, that they treat women with contempt, they abuse women, all these things that the feminists have been saying, which are lies. I'm not saying there aren't men who haven't done that. I'm just saying as a whole, acting like all men are like that is a lie. Well, the manosphere is basically fulfilling that myth and making it true. The other type of person that the manosphere generates is jerks. I mean, frankly, it generates people who just don't treat women who are made in the image and likeness of God, just like men are. It doesn't treat them with the respect as they should. So I would say that as Catholics, we need to have we need to understand that we should not be feminist, but we should not also be the manosphere types, the bro culture, the masculinity cult either. We shouldn't be either one of those. And one thing that brought this up to me was a very disturbing video I saw last week. Now, I want to state that typically when a video goes viral that shows somebody in a bad light, I really do try not to comment on it very quickly, because I'm always like, we don't know the whole story. We don't know everything about it. But I just couldn't help but comment on this one. This is the Steve Crowder video. Now, Steve Crowder is a well-known conservative commentator, if you haven't heard of him. I know him a little bit. Like I would see videos, clips of his, and I'd be like, okay, yeah, he's making some good points here or there. And I never really followed him though. I wasn't like watching his videos or following. I assume he has a podcast. I don't subscribe to his podcast. But essentially last week he announced that he's going through a very painful and difficult divorce. And I watched that where he announced that. And he basically suggested that his wife left him and that he did not want to have a divorce, but because he lived in a state that allowed no fault divorce, he couldn't do anything about it. And it made you sympathetic to him. Like it looked like, oh, here's this guy who wants his marriage to work out, but his wife left him. Now, of course, then a few days later, I shouldn't say, of course, this isn't always the case, but it came out a video that was, his Ring camera, his security camera videotaped it. And obviously his wife had gotten hold of it and sent it to the lawyers, where basically there's a conversation between Crowder and his wife, who is eight months pregnant. And it's disturbing, frankly. I know there's abuse in the world. I know men don't treat their wives as they should in many cases, but it still was disturbing to see it, how he treated his wife. It was frankly abhorrent. Now, by the way, I'm not saying that his wife was a good wife, even a good person. She might be a horrible person. We can't know that. In the video, she seems normal and fine, but perhaps when things we don't see, she's terrible. So I'm not like saying I'm on her side and she's done nothing wrong. What I am saying, though, is there's literally no justification for the way he talked to his wife. He talked to her in a very demeaning manner. He talked to her like she was a little kid, like a bad dad would talk to their little kid. I mean, not even like you should talk to your kids. But it was just incredibly demeaning. He basically was just saying she doesn't love him because she doesn't like prove it by doing all these things he wants her to do. And he eventually told her, he told her like, I don't love you. And he just said, it just was awful. And there's really no excuse the way he talked to her. And what I felt like though watching it is this is somebody who recognizes rightly the dangers of feminism and why feminism is wrong. They've probably read or seen some of the manosphere stuff that, you know, men should be leaders in their families and things like that. But he doesn't really get it. He has not seen an example of it maybe in his own life. I don't know if he's Christian or what he is, but he just doesn't really understand it. And so he just And he doesn't have the discipline that a man always should have, the self-discipline a man should have. And also he doesn't have the most important thing, which is the idea of how men should treat women, which we find very clearly in Ephesians 5, which I'll get to in a second. So I just found that, I mean, I admit I was disturbed by it. I mean, I was almost more disturbed than if I just knew he was outwardly abusive, because that, like, we know that happens and it's awful. It's horrific. But just how abusive he was in like mentally and verbally and all that stuff was just awful. And I pray that, you know, obviously he gets some help, his wife gets some help, but she needs it. And that reconciles. I don't want any marriage to end. The best scenario would be where they both get help and they reconcile and they have a healthy marriage for themselves and for their children. Now, let's talk then about what is the proper relationship between men and women? What are the proper roles? Now, the first thing again is that men and women are different. They're not interchangeable. Men cannot be mothers. Women cannot be fathers. And children need both fathers and mothers. That's one of the horrific parts of gay marriage, is that children deserve a mother and a father, a mother who's obviously female and a father who's male. Typically, that should be their biological parents, but obviously there are situations where it might need to be adoptive parents, and that the Catholic Church and I am always very supportive of. But the point is they should have a mother and a father who are married to each other and love each other. And they need to have both. And so that's the first thing we need to know. Now, I also want to state that there are cultural differences in how this plays out, how the roles of men and women play out. It's not 100% set in like 1950s America. I do think this is where a lot of people get in trouble and they really have some problems, is they want to make the Catholic view of men and women's roles into what is the 1950s role of men and women in marriages in America, and the stereotype, at least. I think that's what gets a lot of people into trouble when they're trying to respond to feminism, because that's what feminism grew out of. I mean, I know feminism dates back before that, but it was a lot of that. And so there are differences culturally. It's not a cookie cutter answer in how this plays out. But the basis of it, of course, comes from Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5, 21 through 33. And this is where St. Paul wrote Ephesians, is talking about the relationship in a Christian household. It says, be subject to one another out of reverence for Christ. Okay, first of all, we can't just gloss over that. The first thing St. Paul says is that be subject to one another. So men are called to be subject to their wives, and women are called to be subject to their husbands. How that plays out, St. Paul is going to talk about more and flesh out. But to say that a man shouldn't be subject to his wife on some level contradicts sacred scripture. It contradicts the words of St. Paul in Ephesians. So be subject to one another out of reverence for Christ. This is wives. Now St. Paul says, okay, now we're going to flesh out what that means. How is each person? How is the wife? How is the husband? How are they subject to one another? Wives, be subject to your husbands as to the Lord. And so that's a pretty definitive statement there. It says, for as the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is head of the church, his body, and is himself its savior. As the church is subject to Christ, so let wives also be subject in everything to their husbands. Okay, this is what every priest makes a little uncomfortable joke about. I don't want to talk about it. I'm going to talk about it. Christ is the head of the wife. I'm sorry. The husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is head of the church. Now, no Christian should act like Christ is not head of the church. Christ is the head of the church. He is, I mean, the head. Likewise, a husband is the head of the household, the head of the wife. And wives need to acknowledge that. The husband must be the leader in the family. He must be the head of the family. This is true patriarchy. Patriarchy, I know, is a bad word in today's world, but it's it's Catholicism is, you know, supports is patriarchy. Christ is the head of the church, the husband's the head of the family and of the wife, and the wife is called to be subject to him as we are subject. The church is subject to Christ. That doesn't leave a lot of wiggle worm. Let's be honest. It says, let wives be subject in everything to their husbands. So wives are called to see their husbands as leaders of the family. Now, it also states that husbands, this is verse 25, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present the church to himself in splendor without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. Even so, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. I just want to make a somewhat of an aside here before I talk about this more. I feel like St. Paul is kind of giving a crack at the guys when he says, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. Like, I know you're vain guys. I know you're egotistical. I know you love yourself and you love taking care of your body. You love, you know, yourself, you know, really you need to love your wives like that. I feel like he's taking a crack at us guys. Anyway, but when he says husbands love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, there is literally no higher bar that St. Paul could set. Christ died for the church. He gave up his entire life, his body, everything for the church. That's how much he loved the church. And we're called men to love our wives that much. We put our wives as the most important things in the most important thing in our life and our family. And we are willing to die for it. We do not put ourselves first ever. A true dad never puts himself first. And this is a struggle. This is not something easy. Every guy will tell you this if they're being honest. I mean, that's one of the biggest challenges when you first get married is you no longer put yourself first. And especially when you start having kids, you want to run out and do something. Well, hold on a second. You might have to take care of the kid then or something like that. The wife might need to be doing something. You need to take care of the kid. You cannot put yourself first. And so marriage, family life is a constant life of death. And I actually mean that in a good way. What I mean by that is somebody's going to clip that marriage and family life is a life of death. And I'm going to be like, and send that to my wife probably. But anyway, and my kids. But the point is it's true. But death in the sense that like Christ's death, it's self-sacrificial. That's how we live. Only by dying can we truly live. And that's what husbands are called to do. Die to self. And put their families first. And so we must love our wives as we love ourselves. And so this is the balance here. It starts off with this, be subject to one another out of reverence for Christ. This is why there is a hierarchy in marriage. Yes, absolutely. The patriarchy. The man is the head. But it's a mysterious way. It's a mutual self-giving that comes out in marriage, in a healthy marriage, a healthy family life, where, yes, the wife looks to the husband as her head, but the husband looks to the wife as the end-all, be-all, the reason he has to give up everything for her. And so there's an equalization there that occurs within the hierarchy. And only by having that hierarchy in the marriage, do we have a healthy marriage in which that equalization actually happens? The equalization only happens through hierarchy. That's an irony. It's a paradox, but it's true. And that's exactly what St. Paul is saying in this passage. You can tell when you read it very carefully. I mean, obviously, just the obvious sense of it. It's a balanced view, starting with be subject to one another. He talks about the wife's role and he talks about the husband's role. In both of them, the roles are extremely difficult, and they're calling each person, the man and the wife, to give up everything. That's what they're both equally. They're both equally giving up everything for the other. They're just doing it in different ways. That's the key, is they're doing it in different ways. They're not doing it identical. And when they try to do it identical, that's when you cause problems. So in practice, what does this mean? I've basically just been talking about the theory, but how about in practice? What does this mean? It means the husband needs to lead in their families, be the leader, but they should always consult with their wife. I always think it's kind of interesting when people talk about like the submission of wives or husbands, because I think, I feel like they're always leaving out the fact that, like, for example, in my own marriage, I would never make a major decision for our family without first consulting with my wife. And I don't even understand how any man would do that. And my wife, I would just say this very clearly. I am 100% confident that if I ask her to do something, obviously if it has to be moral, she would do it. So if I said, honey, we're moving to Seattle, Washington, and we're doing it next week, she probably wouldn't like it. She wouldn't be happy. She'd ask a lot of questions about it. But if I said we're doing it, she would say, okay, I'm going to make the best of it. I'm going to make it so this is the best thing for our family. We're going to do this. And she would be on board. But I would never do that. I would never ask her. I would never tell her, oh, we're moving to Seattle, just out of the blue. If something like that were to occur, like some opportunity or whatever, I would talk to her. I'd say, hey, how do you think this is, you know, would work out for our family? Would this be a good thing for our kids? How would this, you know, affect you? How would this affect me? And stuff like that. We'd talk about it before we'd ever do something like that. And so in a relationship, if you're constantly thinking, like, as a guy, if you're thinking, oh, my wife has to obey me, she has to submit to me, I feel like it's unhealthy. Really, you shouldn't be thinking like that. It should be more like, okay, I want my wife to be involved in any process of decision making. And it's like, yes, the final decision should be the husband's, should be the man's, but ultimately, the wife, I mean, if she's totally against it, she has these very good reasons. Why wouldn't you listen to that? I mean, obviously, there can be a situation where you would have to say, we're going to do this anyway. But ultimately, it usually comes out where in a healthy relationship, after everything is talked out, you come to an agreement. And so it's not like you have to have, the wife doesn't have to submit to it. They both kind of mutually agree after that discussion. So in practice, I think that's one thing. Also in practice, I do think the husband should be the primary breadwinner of the family. Now, obviously, there's exceptions in the case of, like, for example, a husband who's disabled in some way, can't do that. I'm not saying that, again, there's not a cookie cutter answer. But I do think, in general, the man should be the primary breadwinner of the family. He is the leader. He is the priest and the prophet. I'm sorry, the priest, the king, and the prophet. Yeah, sorry. I got that wrong. I got it right. Actually, I think I heard something where it was like not priest, prophet, king. The man is the priest, the provider, and the protector. Those are the three roles. I heard that early on in my marriage, and something I thought was great. He's the priest, meaning he's the head of the spiritual head of the family. He's the one who should be saying it's time for rosary. He's the one who should be saying, let's make sure we get the mass on time, and let's make sure the kids are going to confession. He should be leading that. Not that the wife shouldn't do those things too, but he should be leading that. It should not be the wife dragging everybody to mass. It should be the wife who should be telling, you know, okay, it's time to pray. Make sure the kids go to confession. No, the man, the husband should be the leader in that. He's the priest. He's the provider. Yes, he should be the primary breadwinner if that's possible. He should be the one doing that. He's also the protector. He's the one who lays down his life for his family. Obviously, physically, he should be the one in charge of making sure the family is protected physically, but also spiritually. He should be the one making sure pornography isn't coming into the household. He's the one who should be making sure that the kids aren't watching crap on television or through the internet. He should be the one leading that charge. Yes, again, the wife's involved in that, but the man should be, the husband should be the one leading that. So he's the priest, he's the protector, he's the provider. And he's the leader in all three of those things. And so I really feel like that's important, practically speaking. Now, I just want to say, I am not dogmatic about women, mothers working. I think, especially in today's world, there's a lot of opportunities for women to work at home. I mean, look at, for example, the kind of stereotypical family of Little House on the Prairie, the Ingle family. I'm reading Little House on the Prairie to the girls right now, so I have this in my mind. Pa Ingalls, he works, he provides for the family. He's the protector of the family, the provider and all that. Obviously it's very clear that he's the leader of the family and that his wife, Ma Ingalls, submits to him. Ma Ingalls doesn't have a paying job. But are you telling me she's not working hard at the home? She's doing a ton of work to provide for the family, to make the family, make sure they're fed and clothed and everything. She's making the clothes. She's taking care of a lot of the crops. She's doing all this stuff. And likewise today, some of that might involve working, especially from home. I know a number of good, great wives and mothers who do work on the side from home. And I'm not going to say something wrong with that. And I do think, we also live in a situation in which it's so warped, it's so awful because of all the women going in the workforce back in the 50s and whatnot, that there's lots of areas of the country where you almost have to have two incomes to survive. I would argue that a Catholic family should really work to go somewhere else if that's the case. They should really try to make it work out. I know I live in Washington, D.C. when we first got married. And when we first got married, my wife worked. But as soon as we had our first kid, she stopped. She stayed at home. And I remember talking to my immediate supervisor. And he said to me, he goes, "Oh, it's great that your wife stays at home with your kids. It's great with your kid. It's great that you can afford that. I wish I could afford that." I want to note, this was my superior, my boss, who made more money than me. I did not have any trust fund. I did not have any income from any other source. My parents weren't helping us out. We were living solely on my income for my job, of which he made more money than me. And he said they couldn't afford that. Well, we also lived in a small apartment. We did not take any vacations. I mean, we'd drive home and see our folks. That was it. We didn't take any expensive vacations. We had used cars. We didn't, we did all these things we did to make it work. And I think a lot more families, I'm going to be blunt. I think a lot more families could have only the dad working and not have to have the mom working if they made a lot of radical changes to their lifestyle. Not saying all. I know there's exceptions. There's always exceptions. It's stupid to think there aren't exceptions. But on a whole, I think that should be the model that people work towards. Now, I also would say there are other things that we need to do. I'm kind of running long here, but I'll say a few more practical things. I do want to mention for the men out there, you're not a man if you consume porn. Porn is the one of the great destroyers of families and relationships. You're not being a spiritual leader, a protector, a provider if you're consuming porn. And you're not being a man who is loving his wife as Christ loves the church. And so you need to just do everything you can. I mean, I know it can be a struggle, and you need to go to confession a lot, do everything you can. And I know they might even need to go to see a therapist or something like that. And unfortunately, a lot of them won't help you with this, but you really do have to, kick that habit, get that out of your life, because that's going to destroy your family. And another thing is, I would say to both men and women, you should not have close friendships with people of the opposite sex. Now, it's not that you can't be friends. I have a lot of women friends, but my definition of friend there isn't that I spend any time with them alone. I would never spend any time with any of them alone. And it's always going to be in a group setting. And so we definitely, men, don't be friends with, don't be close friends, like where you spend time alone with women, and women don't do that with men. That is not a way that men are loving their wives as Christ loves the church, or that women are making their husbands their head as Christ is the head of the church. And so we really need to do that. Now, I also, before I finish, I want to acknowledge there are imperfect bad situations out there. Not even bad, but just imperfect situations where perhaps the husband, for example, does not take their role seriously, but the wife does. What does a wife do in that situation? It's a struggle. It's a cross. And I just think you do the best you can. That, for example, let's say the man's not exercising spiritual leadership. and the wife wants him to, you still got to get your kids to Mass. You still got to have your kids praying, going to confession, receiving sacraments. And so you just need to step up and do that and pray for your husband, talk to him, whatever it takes to try to get where he would take that role. So I want to acknowledge those situations that are imperfect, that aren't ideal. And we just do the best we can in those situations. And we understand it's not the ideal, but it's the situation that we're placed in. And so we do the best we can. We pray a lot that it would improve. So finally, I just want to say, as Catholics, we are called to oppose feminism, but we are not called to be reactionaries against feminism. We don't react to feminism by the opposite extreme, which is just as bad. We're a both and. We recognize the legitimate role of men and women. We recognize that, yes, men are head of their families, but men also give up their lives for their families. And so we need to give the proper response, because that's what's going to be the way forward. It's not going to generate new feminists. It's not going to generate jerks. It's going to generate men and women who love each other, who care for one another, and live out their vocations as men and women, as husbands and wives. So let's go ahead and pray for all the relations out there. My daughter just got married this weekend. And yes, I am as happy as you can imagine. And she married a wonderful man. They're good practicing Catholics. I have a lot of faith and confidence in their marriage. But I know there are a lot of relationships that aren't starting off as strongly as my daughter's is, and they're not in good situations. And even for the ones in the good situations, like my daughter and her husband, it's hard. I've been married almost 28 years now. Marriage isn't easy. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. It's the best thing in the world, but it's not easy. And so let's pray for each other, pray for couples, pray for men and women to really live out their roles as husbands and wives, as just men and women in this world, and because that is how we're going to reclaim our culture. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up there. Until next time, everybody, God love you.